WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So is today Columbus Day? Or Indigenous Peoples Day, or both. Let's talk about it. On the very last stop on the L train, or the very first stop on the L, depending which direction you're headed in the Canarsie train station, there's a plaque which features the facial profile of a Native American figure. The depiction itself could be viewed as problematic, with the words, "Welcome to Canarsie." Now, if you've ever been to that station, you may have wondered what that plaque was about, or you may have never even given it a second thought and went about your day. Well, Canarsie was named after the native tribe that lived on that land, right? The Canarsie Indians were part of the Lenape people who existed in much of what is now lower New York State, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and a large part of Long Island. Now, school children growing up in the neighborhoods of Canarsie in East New York are rarely taught this history. It's not in their curriculum. In fact, many of us who grew up and were educated here in the city don't have a clue about those people or the brutality of the things that happened to them on the grounds on which we live. Now, across the country, U.S. history books still credit Christopher Columbus with, quote, discovering the Americas, even though, of course, millions of people lived here for millennia before Columbus arrived in the Bahamas on October 12, 1492. You know that by now. Most of us are simply happy to have, you know, a three-day Saturday, Sunday, Monday weekend. But to make these histories more plain, advocates have been fighting to codify Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day. This past Thursday, the District of Columbia, also named after that same explorer, temporarily changed the day to Indigenous Peoples Day, joining dozens of cities and states that have now officially renamed the day. They include Grand Forks, North Dakota, Dallas, Texas, Alexandria, Virginia, Moorhead, Minnesota, Wichita, Kansas, Ventura County, California, South Lake Tahoe, California, D.C., New Mexico as a state, Vermont as a state, Maine, Louisiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Joining us now to talk about the significance of Indigenous Peoples Day is Nick Martin, staff writer at The New Republic, where he covers Native and Indigenous issues. He's also a member of the Sapani tribe. We also have Kevin Gover on the line. He's the director of the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian and a citizen of the Pawnee tribe of Oklahoma. So thanks both of you for joining us. Good morning.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Good morning.
And Kevin, I know we only have you for about 5 minutes. So what are you doing at the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian today that's relevant to today, if you are?
Well, we have programming on any federal holiday. So if you go down to the museum, by the way, we have museums in both D.C. and in Lower Manhattan. You'll find performers and activities for children. So we try to make it a friendly place to be. We don't talk about Columbus a lot at our museum.
You don't talk, I guess not. Well, except that he kind of started it, right?
Well, I don't know what that means. He really didn't start much. I suppose my friends would say that he started the process of European colonization.
Right,
of
exactly.
The New World.
Well, that's what I meant. I mean, what if I say he started a genocide? Would that be too strong?
No, it would not be too strong, especially in his own personal case. I don't throw that word around lightly, but I think it's an easy case to make in the case of Christopher Columbus and his men.
What's the most, I've never been to your branch of the Smithsonian. How much do you confront your visitors with the reality of that?
Well, we try to. We're not afraid of that kind of material, and we do present the unfortunate elements of history, but we also don't want to portray Native Americans as victims.
Mm-hmm.
They had agency, they still have agency, and right now is a time when they're thriving. So while we're always willing to present the truth about the history, we're also trying to bring people along and let them know, hey, Indians are still here. A stunning number of Americans don't know that there are still American Indians living among them. And so our priority is to make sure they know that, and to know that this thing between the United States and the Indians, this relationship, is ongoing, and that we've all inherited it and we all have responsibilities for its maintenance.
What would you like to see on our part, that is the media's part, in telling the story of Native Americans in generally, and as it relates to Columbus Day in particular, if you want to go there?
Well, I think the media has been doing a better and better job of doing that and of reporting on Native American stories. Unfortunately, it seems that the only time we make headlines is when we're making trouble. And so Indians were invisible on the national news media for the better part of a decade, I'd say, until the protest at Standing Rock. And even then, you didn't see it until it was very late in that event that the media started covering it. And so there are things like that going on all the time out in Indian country. There are contests and conflicts over resources, over water, over land, over the state of the environment. And the media doesn't tend to see it very often. Now, on the other hand, it's also our responsibility to sort of bring that material forward to the media. But once we do, we're really looking to the media to share the stories that we're telling.
Since you're down there in D.C. and D.C. just declared Indigenous Peoples Day, I'm not sure if it's alongside of or in replacement of Columbus Day. What's going on there today? Anything that commemorates that?
Not that I know of, except at our museum. It was a surprise that the council took this emergency vote to declare this year the district would celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day as opposed to Columbus Day. So we'll see if that becomes a permanent state of affairs down here. But it just goes to show, you know, what's really important about this is not so much necessarily the denigration of Columbus. I think the truth needs to be told about who he was, but more the civic conversation, and that people are listening and talking about it and say, hey, I didn't know that, or hey, you know, this Columbus, you know, is a bad guy, or hey, we ought to be celebrating Indigenous people. All that's to the good as far as I'm concerned. So in a way, the outcome of these conversations is less important than the fact they're taking place.
I know you got to go. Just tell us real quick. Tell the general public when they come and visit our nation's capital, what's the killer app in the Native American branch of the Smithsonian Museum? What's the thing that people go there and love and go home and tell stories about?
You have to come down. Two things. One is our cafe is the best food on the National Mall. So come and have lunch with us and enjoy some Indigenous foods. Second, we have an exhibition called Americans, where we explore some of the mythology in American history that involves Indians. So we talk about Pocahontas, we talk about the Trail of Tears, we talk about Little Bighorn. And then we ask the visitor to consider why these stories, out of the thousands of stories there are, why do we hold on to these? And we think those are interesting questions that lead to interesting answers.
Since you mentioned the food first, what's on the menu?
Oh, geez, salmon, bison, wild rice, all sorts of dishes from Central and South America, Three Sisters meals, corn, beans, and squash. So they're Native-inspired foods that were created by Native agriculturalists over the course of those millennia that you mentioned earlier. And it helps people realize that there was a lot going on in the Americas prior to the arrival of Columbus.
Kevin Gover, director of the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian. Thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And to Nick Martin, staff writer at The New Republic, where he covers Native and Indigenous issues. He's also a member of the, and you pronounce this for me because I think I may have mispronounced it before.
Yeah, it's the Pony Tribe out of High Plains, North Carolina, or Person County, North Carolina.
Is there, are there Native lands there still, or what's the community like?
Yeah, I mean, the High Plains community has been around for hundreds and thousands of years. We date back to Southern Virginia, and slowly we actually currently straddle the North Carolina-Virginia line, still, you know, plenty of people living down there, and always growing up, I was always visiting there every few weekends, there for our Sapone youth camp, just keeping that connection both with the land and the people that define who Sapone are.
I see you're wearing a t-shirt that says, in quotes, "Merciless Indian Savages," unquote, with the subhead "Declaration of Independence."
Yes.
What does it mean?
Well, that's just, it's a shirt I got from a Native artist and an online shop that I thought it would be appropriate to wear today because it comes from the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson wrote it. I've got the quote here, but the idea behind it was that one of the reasons for declaring independence from Britain was that they had left them at the mercy of the merciless Indian savages. And it's something that is written into one of the most important and historic documents and that undergirds this nation. So I thought on Indigenous Peoples Day, even though we don't call it here in New York, I thought it would be appropriate to just kind of remind people.
I went over that list at the top of cities, counties, and states that are declaring this Indigenous Peoples Day, either in replacement of or alongside of it being Columbus Day. Are you surprised that it's happening a lot more now after all these years of American history?
I don't think I'm surprised. I think that the museum director touched on this, but I think what happened 2016, 2017 around Standing Rock really kind of shook a lot of, whether it's governments, just regular citizens, and definitely the media organizations. It kind of awoke it broadened their horizon a little bit. You know, it made them think about Indigenous and Native peoples in a way that they really hadn't considered, only in these kind of pockets of protests. So the occupation of Alcatraz or the occupation of the BIA building, the standoff at Wounded Knee. All of these events were kind of one-offs. Mm-hmm. And then we, as a country, just kind of forgot to pay attention to us. We're still here. There are millions of us still living and thriving.
We'll continue in a minute. With Nick Martin, we'll also bring in filmmaker Diane Freyer, and people are calling in. Hang on, we're going to try to get to some of you at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Among other things, we'll ask, can this day be both in some way going forward? Stay with us. Diane Lehrer on WNYC on this Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day, as it is increasingly being additionally named or renamed around the country, with Nick Martin, staff writer at The New Republic, where he covers Native and Indigenous issues. And also with us for a few minutes is Diane Freyer, a member of the Osage and Cherokee Nations, a filmmaker and founder of American Indian Artists, Inc., also known as Amerinda, a multi-arts organization for Native American artists. Diane, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
What have you got going today, or Amerinda?
Have a great day off.
That's a great day. If it's a day in honor of your heritage, you might as well get the day off, right?
Yes, yes, definitely. Enjoy the day. That's a lot. That's a big accomplishment some days.
Tell us about one of your films or anyone else's that you'd like to draw attention to, that you'd like people to see.
Well, we just wrapped out my feature film, The Heart Stays, which I'm very proud of. It's a coming-of-age story of two young Native girls that leave the safety of family and tradition on the Riz and to follow their dreams. And one of them receives a scholarship to go to a prestigious school in the East, and the other one decides to be a rock star, and they collide with the world of racism and drugs and all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And the older one ends up having to try to save the younger one. So it's a contemporary story is what really important about it, because I don't tell stories about historical dramas, mm-hmm, about natives, because we have a living culture. So
That's great, telling the contemporary stories. Where can people see it?
Well, we got to get it finished. We're in post-production right now, but it's perilously close to where we're going to be entering in film festivals and working real hard and getting it out there. Hopefully have post finished by the end of the year.
That's a great director's phrase there, perilously close to having an actual movie. Greg in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Diane Freyer and Nick Martin. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
Last time I talked to you, I was in Shenzhen, and I did make it back okay through Hong Kong, so good to be on again.
Very glad to hear that.
I just had a question about the terminology of referring to Indigenous or Indians or Native Americans or First Nation. I'm just thinking about the recent book that Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz wrote, An Indigenous Peoples History of the United States. And she talks about how she uses these terms interchangeably in the text, because she says that Indigenous individuals in North America do not consider Indian a slur. And so I'm just wondering
how our
what
guests,
the conversation is around that.
Where is it for you, Diane?
Well, most Native people refer to themselves as the nation that they're from. Like, I mm-hmm. say them Osage and Cherokee, and mm-hmm. I know that Nick acknowledged being Halawasapony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's more accurate. I think Indigenous is too dilute. It sounds like something that someone outside the community attached to us again or tried to identify us as, rather than asking Native people what they would like to be called, what would Osage mm-hmm. like, how would they like mm-hmm. to identify mm-hmm. this, and also it also is another missed opportunity, because if that were the case, then we might actually move toward having some kind of greater acknowledgement of the First Peoples here in North America.
Do you,
and who they really are,
Nick? When you're writing about Native and Indigenous issues, as I call it, for the New Republic, is there a term that you use?
I think that's a good question for me. And also, just to clarify, the Halawasapony and the Saponi are actually two separate tribes, but all descended from the same kind of band, and historically, but we are now two separate tribes. So I just wanted to say that. And then also that for me, when I'm writing, if it's a general group of multi-tribal people, then that can be a native group of, whatever, organizers, mm-hmm. activists, scientists, doctors, whoever. But I always try to refer to people by their specific tribal nation. That's one thing I think is important when we're thinking about this. Also, it's just important to remember that these are tribal sovereign nations. All of them govern themselves. They write their own laws. Lots of them have their own police forces, run their own hospital and school systems. These are not just like kind of markers. These are real political entities. And that's a really important thing to remember when you're thinking about these things.
Catherine in New Canaan, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. We have 15 seconds for you to ask your question. Go for it.
Okay. I believe my question is, why can't we celebrate both the Indigenous peoples and Christopher Columbus, or that is to say, mm-hmm. The Italian contribution to the spirit of exploration that brought the West here? We are here, and I think both should be celebrated. Why can we not celebrate both?
Nick, what do you think?
I think what some people call exploration, I call colonization. I think that for me, it's so this is kind of the analogy. It's not a perfect one to make, but it's how I think of it. And I grew up in the rural South. We have lots of Confederate monuments down there. And the same way that I see a Confederate monument of Robert E. Lee and feel like that's wrong and that's not something our society should be celebrating, I think myself and other you know, Native and tribal nation citizens see a statue like of Columbus and Columbus Circle, and we have a similar feeling. That was not an uplifting movement or moment for us.
And yet, for a lot of Italian-Americans,
right,
it's become like an Italian-American Heritage Day,
almost
detached from the story of Christopher Columbus himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's probably room if you want to do something that's specifically about Italian-American heritage, because they faced a lot of similar, or maybe not similar, but they did face a lot of discrimination in the early 20th century. But I think that for me, Indigenous Peoples Day is definitely a little bit more needed now.
Nick Martin and Diane Freyer, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.